Good afternoon. Your Honors, my name is Santo Volpe, and I represent Mr. Parrish Cole. Your Honors, on August 31st, 2005, Mr. Cole and the government entered into and presented a plea agreement. That plea agreement does not specifically state what section of Rule 11 applies. It is our position that Rule 11 C1A and C are the applicable provisions, and therefore the plea agreement is binding on the court.
Mr. Volpe, isn't the worst thing that could happen to your client that we would grant him the relief that you want? In other words, he could go back to the trial court, have the plea agreement rejected because it wasn't going to be followed in the provisions you're asserting, and then face the 851 notice, mandatory minimum. That's not a good outcome.
No, what he seeks is either rescission.
He can't get specific performance of the guideline calculation.
Well, what he could get is specific performance of the binding provisions of the plea agreement,
if the judge rejects it, he allows him to withdraw the plea.
Well, that's
in fact is an 11C1C. It's not a good outcome for your client.
No, but what is
because
a good
outcome? Because the government
passed
up the opportunity to file the 851 notice based on this agreement. If they file the 851 notice, he faces a mandatory minimum of greater than the 97 months or so that he got by several years.
I see what Your Honor is saying, but
does he really want to pursue this appeal?
He seeks to have to go back to the district court, Your Honor.
And if he goes back
the
judge has already indicated he's not going to follow the calculations provisions that you and the government agreed to.
I understand what Your Honor is saying.
He's added in, appropriately,
yes,
a conversion of the money. So he's not going to follow that. And your guy gets to withdraw his plea at best if it's an 11C1C, and then he faces the 851 notice.
I understand.
Does he really want to pursue this appeal?
Yes, he does, Your Honor.
You're sure about that?
We're quite sure. The acceptance of responsibility and the government recommendation that the sentence should be at the minimum of the guideline range were within the non-binding provisions of the plea agreement.
Let's back up to the waiver, though. The waiver language doesn't waive just correct sentences or correct sentencing processes. It waives all challenges to the sentence or conviction except for the ineffective assistance of counsel provision. It waives any challenge to the sentence.
I understand, Your Honor. What I'm trying to say is Rule 11C1A controls and C1B, because the plea agreement, the prosecutor agreed to dismiss counts 2 through 9. Therefore, A applies. In exchange for that, Mr. Cole pled guilty to count 1. As far as the sentencing, the parties stipulated that the sentence would be on the basis of between 100 and 400 grams of heroin and between 250 and 1 kilogram of marijuana. At the sentencing hearing, the district court modified the agreement. A plea agreement can only be rejected or accepted by the district court. The court has no authority to modify it, none whatsoever. And that's exactly what happened here. The district court specifically stated that it was going to accept the agreement except for the way the district court modified the agreement. That's a violation of Rule 11, Your Honor. Rule 11 does not allow for the piecemeal acceptance of plea agreements. It just does not allow it. And that's U.S. v. Lockwood by this court and several other cases. But that's what happened here. A plea agreement is a contract, and it must be the parties. It must be interpreted according to the reasonable expectations of the parties. And this is what the parties expected. The prosecutor and the defense attorney agreed. The prosecutor, who drafted the plea agreement, attended the change of plea hearing, was a sentencing prosecutor, or attended the sentencing prosecutor, and who wrote the government's appeal, and is about to argue, is this all in the same? It cannot be denied that he told the district court that he was honor bound, that this was something brand new in this courthouse, this conversion. If I may, I would like to get into the waiver issue, because that is the first thing that the government has jumped on, and that, which is understandable. Waivers of appeal are only as good as the rest of the agreement. The whole agreement stands or the whole agreement falls. And since there was a modification of the sentencing and of the agreement by the district court, the agreement is unenforceable.
Did your client move to withdraw the plea following sentencing?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Did your client move to withdraw the plea following sentencing?
No, he did not. For reasons outside the record, which would be the subject matter of the collateral proceeding, most properly. For some reasons, he did not move the district court to withdraw the plea agreement.
So what remedy are you asking for here?
Pardon?
What remedy are you asking for here?
Reversal.
Well, I understand. And what following reversal are you asking for? Resentencing, which actually isn't the proper remedy in this context? Are you asking to have the conviction vacated?
Conviction vacated and going back to the district court.
So it is, Judge Tinder has described, that it would roll back everything to the status quo and he'd be subject to the enhancement.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May I? The white light is on. Thank you.
Ms. Milzek?
May it please the Court, David Nozick on behalf of the United States. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Indiana. Your Honors, this is the simplest case of the day, because this is a case, quite simply, for which we should not be here. And we should not be here, of course, because the defendant has waived his right to appeal, and he has knowingly and voluntarily waived this right. Seventh Circuit has taken these waivers of rights very seriously as well. You should. If you didn't, you'd be here all night long hearing appeals on criminal cases where the defendant did not like his sentence. The case that is fatal to the defense is, interestingly, a case quoted or cited to just now by Mr. Volpe. That's the Lockwood case. The Lockwood case stands for the provision that waivers of appeals will be honored if they're known and voluntary, unless they fall into some very narrow exceptions. And there's been case after case in the Seventh Circuit which have said that appeal waivers will be upheld unless there are one or two exceptions. One, and then perhaps the main one, is if the sentence was if the court relied on constitutionally impermissible factors, such as race is one example. There's no allegation of that in this case, and there, of course, there's nothing on the record in this case. And the only other section or the only other issue that they cite to is if the sentence imposed by the district court exceeds the statutory max. Here the statutory maximum was 20 years, and the defendant received a sentence of 97 months, well within the statutory maximum. So the government believes we don't get any past, I shouldn't get past this argument, and this honorable court shouldn't get past the defendant's appeal waiver. Now, I've heard some questions, which I understand, which is asking Mr. Volpe, is this really what your client wants? Maybe we should give him what he asked for, and he'll go back and he'll face, you know, the A51 enhancement, face a trial, et cetera. And, you know, perhaps there's some sort of instinct to give the defendant what he's asking for, because he may be in a worse-off situation. The government is asking you, of course, not to do that, as the defendant has waived his right to appeal, and there is an interest in the government, as far as public policy goes, of closing cases in a manner and moving on to the next one. Now, the record in this case cannot be any more clear that the defendant did waive his right to appeal. He doesn't argue that. The plea agreement states the maximum sentence is 20 years. That was reviewed at the sentencing hearing. The appeal waiver is the standard one. It specifically says in the plea agreement the court has jurisdiction and authority to impose any sentence within the statutory maximum. The court specifically covered that at the sentencing hearing. The Honorable Judge Moody tells him the sentence imposed may be different from any estimate your lawyer,
that
government.
That was the guilty plea hearing.
I'm sorry, yes.
That was the guilty plea hearing.
Yes.
Not the sentencing hearing.
I'm sorry, at the guilty plea hearing. I apologize, Your Honor.
At the guilty plea hearing, after Judge Moody accepted the guilty plea, he then goes on to say something to the effect that if I'm not going to follow the plea agreement, I'll give you the opportunity to withdraw your plea of guilty.
Correct.
You recall that?
He said that at the sentencing or at the guilty plea?
At the guilty plea hearing.
He did. And then the defendant never did try and withdraw his plea.
Right. Well, was that the deal? Was it an 11C1C agreement?
No, Judge. If it was
then when Judge Moody said that, why didn't you say something?
To be candid, I'm not positive. But if it's an 11C1C, I'm not sure how the practice is in other districts. It quite clearly says that in the plea. This is under 11C1C, and it is binding upon the court. The Honorable Judge Moody stated time and again, I'm not bound by this. Do you understand that I can give you any sentence up to the statutory max? I can give you any sentence.
He said it time and again until after he accepted the plea, and then he said, if I don't accept the terms of the plea agreement, I'll tell you that and give you the opportunity to withdraw your plea of guilty.
Correct. It would appear to be somewhat of a contradiction.
Throw up a red flag for you if this was not an 11C1C agreement?
To be candid, Judge, I believe the
judge said you don't pay attention to everything Judge Moody says.
No, of course I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I would say that I believe that's standard practice that they say that, and I'd have to think it through. I think standard practice that they say that at the end of every plea. But I will tell you that 11C1Cs are rarely accepted by the court, and you know some judges accept them, some don't, and if they do, you know, it's sort of a big thing where it's there in big block letters. This is an 11C1C, and it's binding upon the court. I think what is important here, Your Honor, is that the defendant was told, I can give you anything up to the statutory max. Do you understand that? Yes. And you will not be able to withdraw it. Do you understand that? Yes. So I believe, you know, the defendant was on notice, but I see my yellow light is on. But I believe what really trumps all of that is the waiver of the appeal in this case, Judge. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing which falls in the very narrow exceptions, impermissible factors exceeding the statutory max, which the defendant has argued and which the defendant falls into. If the court has no more questions, I'll rest upon the brief.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rick. Mr. Volpe? You have 1.5 minutes, Mr.
Judge, what we have here is an ambiguous plea agreement. And in Bones, which was the chief case relied upon by the prosecutor when he filed his motion to dismiss the appeal, it was held that in interpreting plea agreements, the government is to be held to the literal terms of the agreement and ordinarily must bear responsibility for any lack of clarity. Here, the language of the plea agreement makes it clear. Maybe it was not drafted artfully, but any ambiguity is the government must bear the responsibility for it. As far as the waiver issue, the whole plea, the whole agreement stands or the whole agreement falls. And if any, if the agreement, if the proceedings are not taken in compliance with Rule 11, then the defendant is allowed to appeal. That's it, pure and simple. In every case that I have found, and in all four of the government waiver cases, the defendant either violated the waiver of appeal provision outright or exceeded its scope. I'm sorry, the red light is on.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.